Coming up next, Mummy's Diet. Whoever said dead men tell no tales obviously never met Dr. Jocelyn Williams. She's an assistant professor of anthropology at Trent University in Peterborough, and for her, the dead are just full of information. Dr. Williams has been studying an archaeological site in Peru where there's a graveyard full of mummies that were buried 500 years ago. Now, a team that includes Dr. Williams has unearthed a number of these mummies and has started to analyze their secrets. So far, she's been able to figure out what they were eating and maybe why some of them died. Dr. Williams, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
First of all, can you tell me about this site in Peru? Where is it and what's it look like?
The site is located in the central coast of Peru. It's located just outside of the capital city of Lima. The coast of Peru is a desert environment, so it's very much how you would picture a desert, with very few trees, mostly a fairly arid, dry-looking landscape. The site itself is located in a valley, and the cemetery itself isn't all that visible. It's actually buried beneath a town that was recently constructed on top of the site.
Wow. So it's a valley that's not too far from the ocean.
Right, yeah. It's within about a 4 hours walk to the ocean.
How was the site discovered?
The site was uncovered by people living in the shantytown when they were digging pits for their latrines or digging pits for their garbage. Also, they're in the process of having sewer lines installed and power lines installed. So a combination of both of these things is what uncovered many of the mummies that were buried at the site.
So you're saying there's a town over top of this ancient gravesite?
Exactly, yeah. It's been built completely on top of the gravesite.
Well, then how do you as scientists get to the mummies?
That's a good question. It's actually a very difficult task. We're limited in our excavations to the streets of the shantytown, to the schoolyard, and to the play yard. So we're only able to excavate a very small portion of the cemetery. We're actually not able at all to get at the entire cemetery.
Boy. Who were the people that lived in this valley in Peru 500 years ago?
This time period is characterized by the Inca culture. They conquered the coast of Peru a fairly long time ago, and they incorporated the people that lived on the central coast of Peru into the Inca Empire.
Now, what do the mummies actually look like, the ones you've found so far?
They're fairly lifelike in their appearance. They still retain skin and hair and fingernails, eyelashes, tattoos, that sort of thing. So they're very lifelike, but they're certainly very dried out.
But are they, when I think of mummy, I think of an Egyptian mummy. Are they similar to that?
They are similar in the overall appearance to Egyptian mummies, but they're in fact created in an entirely different way. The Egyptian mummies are very much intentional mummies, where people were removing internal organs, wrapping them in linen, that sort of thing, whereas these mummies are very much naturally created due to the aridity of the central coast of Peru.
So once you've unearthed these mummies, why were you interested in what they'd been eating?
So I was very interested in trying to understand individuals' life experiences. So in particularly how healthy they were during their lifetime, how well they existed in their environment. And a really nice way to get at this is through their diet. So trying to understand if they had a lot of dietary choices, or were they very limited to only one or two food items. And this has an important implication to their health.
Well, how did you go about determining what these people ate?
What I did is I sampled a variety of tissues. So I was able to sample bone, skin, hair, nail, tendon, and muscle. And I used the stable isotopes of carbon and nitrogen. So these are just the different chemical composition of these tissues to try and investigate what they ate. And we can do this because different food items have different isotope ratios. So, for example, plants such as corn would have a very distinct and different isotope ratio from plants such as a potato. And the point behind sampling a variety of tissues is because the different tissues grow at different rates. So, for example, bone will record diet for about 15 years, whereas hair grows 1 centimeter per month. So 1 centimeter of hair will give me an information on 1 month of diet. So I was able to compare and contrast these long-term indicators of diet to short-term indicators of diet.
So you're saying, in other words, the food that I eat today leaves a chemical signature in my bones and my hair?
That's absolutely right. Every plant, every animal that we consume is broken down and reused by our body to form our tissues.
So what did you see when you looked at the tissues of these ancient people?
Well, I found a lot of interesting information, actually. I found that the short-term indicators of diet corresponded to some seasonal fluctuations in diet. So, for example, during the coastal winter, they were consuming primarily tubers. This was most likely potatoes, but it could have also been a variety of other root crops. Whereas in the summer, they were consuming primarily corn. So I was able to show that their diet was very much a product of what agricultural crops were available at what time. And this was interesting because the Inca are very well known for their provisioning or their the supplying of food to their subjects. So we certainly anticipate that they would have been relying on stored food. But my research demonstrates that they were not relying exclusively or primarily on stored food. They were relying on food that they themselves were cultivating in their landscape.
So the fact that they had two different crops, a winter and a summer crop, what does that tell you about the health of the population?
It tells us that in some regard they were quite vulnerable because they weren't producing excess food that could carry them over during periods of crop failure, for example. So they weren't kind of buffered or protected from environmental problems, and that makes them somewhat susceptible because when you don't have good nutrition, you're much more likely to get sick and you're much more likely to die.
Were they vulnerable more in the winter or the summer?
My data shows that more individuals die during the summer months than the winter months. And to some degree, this was unexpected because in modern society and in the majority of historic populations, we see a greater number of deaths during the winter months because we associate the winter with a time of hardship and also respiratory diseases, which are generally more fatal than diseases we associate with the summer months. But that's not at all the case in this site. What we're seeing is more people are dying during the summer. And the reason we think that more people are dying during the summer is because they may have had poorer dietary choices in the summer. They may not have had a very good breadth of dietary choices.
Now, the summertime, that's when they were growing the corn?
Exactly. The summertime is when they were growing their corn, and this is also when the tubers that they had grown during the winter would have run out. They wouldn't have had any more left. So their diet would have primarily been composed of maize and also some animal protein, but they wouldn't have had the same breadth of food choices.
Fascinating stuff. Dr. Williams, thank you very much for your time.
Oh, you're very welcome. It was a pleasure to talk with you.
Dr. Jocelyn Williams is an assistant professor of anthropology at Trent University in Peterborough.